Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative, We All About Lost Souls podcast. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
What up?
Oh, g'day.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is going to be, I'm sorry for the release schedule in advance. So this show is coming out the week before Adepticon next week. Several of us will be at Adepticon along with several thousand other gamers. And so I don't know if we'll get another episode out, but we will do our best. But just want to let you know that we're thinking about y'all. Thank you for keeping us in your minds. And the 40K train is not stopping. How are y'all doing, everybody?
Me, I'm doing good. Yeah, been playing lots of games, getting my reps in, getting ready for a team tournament at the end of this month. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty much the same. I'm playing like 2 to 3 games a week, getting ready for some big team events. And yeah, I'm loving my 40K.
I'm doing good. I've got my team stuff. I think my Imperial agents are pretty good where I'm at with all 50 Death Watch.
Yeah.
I'm currently working on Night Lords. I continue my work on my Night Lords. And my local group has got a crusade going that I'm pretty excited about.
Fantastic.
I put this in our Discord, but I feel like a lot of my life right now is dedicated to making custom bases for Eldar. I don't begrudge it. They're looking good. They really are looking good. But then
but
my list is still in a little bit of flux. And so I'm like, well, got to get more of those old models on the new bases.
Yeah. Well, it's just good that you have those old models, like, because there are, I mean, when was the last time a full army of Aspect Warriors was viable, right? We're talking like 5th, 4th, like, we're talking like decades ago where you needed to have like fire dragons in the same armies as banshees, as scorpions, as warp spiders and reapers. And like there have been times where one or two of those things have been good over the years, but having them all at the same time, it's beautiful.
I've got some, like, this is not me. I'm not about to describe a real problem.
Okay.
But I am having this debate with myself, like, do I want to, because I have some of the old models that I haven't painted up yet. And I'm thinking, do I want to put the new models next to the old models next to the new models, you know, and give them a, you know, more modernized paint scheme. And the truth is they're still very similar. Of course, the new plastic ones are a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more like chiseled and sleek and cut, but they're the same scale. But I'm just thinking, can I, and I'm the one that's going to be spending the most time looking at them, like, can I deal with it?
Yeah, so which ones do you think line up fine and which ones don't? Because I got a feeling the biggest ones that will look like, you know, stand out, like the proverbials, would be like Swooping Hawks.
Where the actual debate is, because the Swooping Hawks, the new ones are all, they're all on the rocks and stuff, and the newer ones are not. So I'm thinking, do I just intermingle the models?
Imagine having a perfectly good model on a, like, standing on a perfectly good base and then having to put it under a tactical rock. What a world we live in. My vendetta continues, if you didn't notice.
But I did, so I did a kit bash on a Warp Spider Exarch. The focus of this is not Eldar. We're going to talk about some demons here in just a minute, and then some prep for Adepticon, what we expect to see. I was like, when I first read the Power Blade Array on the Warp Spiders, I'm like, nope, Games Workshop, I'm not falling for it. I'm not putting these blades on this shooting squad. Like, that's like, sometimes that's Blunderville 101. It's like, you got a mismatch of what the unit is probably designed to do. And until I started running the Power Blade Array, I'm like, this is pretty good.
Yeah, dude, it's the 10 attack you're talking about, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Because normally you are absolutely correct. Like, I think a great current debate is the Lord Cacophonist from Emperor's Children, who can have a power sword, which is just a power sword, strength 5, AP 2, 1 damage, or you can, and a pistol, or you can have two pistols, and you're like, why would I take I take a unit that can't fight and put like 5% more fight, or why not just give it another gun for the thing that it's already trying to do every game? Whereas there is a threshold. And it's around 10 attacks. Oh,
nine,
2 digits.
9 or more attacks, yeah.
Yeah. Looks like 2 digits is the threshold for one war gear, a change.
We think about what's out there, though. It's like Astra Militarum are a thing right now. Other Eldari are a thing right now. You know, even the demons we're going to be talking about, they've got a bunch of real like things you can put some weighted dice on, and you can reliably deliver that thing into combat. So I've enjoyed it. But really where I'm going with that is I converted one of the old metal Exarchs. This is not the one I did, but you know, the old metal, the original Warspider Exarchs. And this is just my pile of models that I've got if I need to start carving up things, you know, where to pull from. So I just have one close by. I kitbashed it to have the power blades in and the power blades out. And standing next to the new models, you know, outside of the head being a little bit different shape, and but it's same scale, same everything, looks just fine. So I can see a lot of coolness at blending the things together. But on the swooping hulks, like you're talking about, with the different, you know, heights and stuff, is that, how am I going to feel about that on the table?
The flatness, the sheer, like, one, like, two dimensions those models come in. Like, the third dimension isn't there. Like, you turn them sideways and they disappear like a piece of paper. And the new ones are so dynamic. Exactly right. So that's the only one that jumped into my mind, because I think the Scorpions are fine. I think the Banshees are relatively fine. I don't know if the Banshee heads are different sizes from old to new.
A little bit of it's like the main difference is, of course, like the crispness of the mold, the detail.
Yeah.
Like the arms are a little, they're both sturdier and more lithe at the same time, you know, but only by just a little bit. Otherwise, it's perfect scale.
Yeah. Well, easy done then. Yeah.
But anyway, that's my personal struggle as I'm doing making all these bases and getting ready.
I have a question about Tanya. Do you own any like Black Reach boys? How do you, and do you all own any new boys? You're all new boys. I was wondering how they look next to each other.
I have no idea.
I think the new orcs are much bigger than the old ones.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought as well.
But the new ones also kind of stand up a little bit straighter as well. So it's hard to tell scale, but like, I think the new ones are taller.
Yeah, and this is going to be very visual, but I always remember the old ones having, like, sorry to say it like this, the dump truck out. And then you just stick the torso on the front of the dump truck and there's your orc.
Yeah.
I always thought that was like, they always seem so squat down and like they're going to fall on their face all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the new ones are fantastic.
So custom bases, you know, talking about how to build new army, the like you're talking about the aspect host, there's a lot of different, I think there's a lot of builds. I don't think there's one real singular list out there right now, but it is nice just right now.
Yeah.
Seeing what it can play with.
Absolutely. And like, it's so wild. Like, I think whilst the Eldari Codex isn't solved, people are congregating around the Aspect Host and Yunari as being the two, I suppose, ones they think have the best potential. Mm-hmm. But it's just crazy to think that, like, if anything should change in a data slate or whatever, the next rung down are like 11% less good, if that's even a thing. Even if they are, like, they're so internally well balanced that there's so many pivots you can do and still have a great game, great army.
I'm digging it. We're here talking about some demons, so thanks for hearing about my problem, not problem, you know, that's happening. And then, you know, still these plastic card, a little bit of love and effort, making the entire army look like getting almost a facelift, even though it's the base. It's nice to do
a facelift.
Facelift. Yeah. Boom.
Yep. Yeah. Mm. You don't drop the base, you lift the base.
That's right.
But since our last episode, there have been even more detachments and more innovation from players out there happening right now. And I think a lot of that is happening in the demon world. The demons have gotten a big change.
Yeah. In some ways better, some ways for the worse. Mostly for the worse is the fact that there was some models legendated in the transition from, well, index to index, because they didn't get a codex, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The Slaaneshi Chariots, which were models that I didn't love, but they were like a good quarter of the model range available for Slaanesh, are
because
now legendary.
The different
like
builds of the chariots you could make. Yeah.
Essentially, you had a herald option for each one, and then you had three types of chariots. You had the regular chariot, the Hellflayer, and the Exalted Chariot, the big old thing. And I got to say, as a player who breaks models, I look at that army, and no matter how much I love Slaanesh, I'm not willing to put those models through the experience of being owned by me. Because I owned some Admech once upon a time. Now I don't own Admech because I can't be trusted to have nice things. But so they took a significant hit. Also, they had the data sheet changes. And for some reason, Karanak went away. And I can't explain that to you, because that's a plastic model that's relatively new.
What's even worse is I'm pretty sure the Warhammer community picture that had Bellicor like up front on there.
Yeah.
Pretty sure our three-headed dog boy was there.
Correct.
Like, he got the best boy treatment by the Grim Reaper. It was rough.
He's looking from the warp.
Is Skulltaker's got a new model, yeah? Or is Skulltaker still in
Flankcast? No, he got a new model.
He got a new model the same time as Karanak.
Same dynamic pose. They may have even given him a tactical rock.
He doesn't have a tactical rock. But I mean, that's what I mean. Like that model stayed and is of the same, you know, timeline as Karanak. So I wonder what happened there. They lost the mold. Like, we don't know where he is. Karanak's in here somewhere. Come here, buddy. Come here, boy. And they're like, no, he's gone. So that one stumped me. But despite what the balanced data sheet did to the Slaaneshi detachment, they've got a brand new detachment that looks really spicy, like properly spicy. And they have, like I said, they have data sheets that did unarguably got worse, like the Keeper of Secrets. And they got ones that got dramatically better, like Bellicor, Flesh Hounds, and a couple of other bits and pieces.
I like it when Bellicor is good because that model is just so stellar.
It's one of the best models that's come out ever. It's just one of the best models. And the fact that it fits so well into what you think Bellicor would look like that's what I love the most, is when they bring out a model, I'm like, that's exactly what I imagined. Like, to the freaking little altar he's standing on. It's incredible.
What are some of the standout, like, why do you think Bellicor got better?
So Bellicor got better. So he gets in the detachment that he, you know, you want to pretty much always take him in the Shadow Legion. He gets packed. He gets dark packed as if he was a Chaos Space Marine.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And in that detachment, he passes those
sustained lethal hits. Is it?
Yeah. Pick your poison, whichever one's better for what you're whacking into. His damage output got better. I think he got an extra attack. He got an extra toughness, I believe, also. And then his triple modal, you know, Primarch-like ability got changed as well. The one you still probably want most of the time is the fact that he's still got his lone-op 18-inch aura. But he also has, while friendly Legion's Demonica or Shadow Legion unit is within 6, reroll hit rolls of 1. Which can be quite impactful with some of the Chaos Space Marine models you can take in this detachment, because this is a detachment unless you take half Chaos Space Marines and Demons, which is quite nice. And then the second one is really cool. Like, if Bellicor's almost dead, you turn this on, this next one, and it's pretty much similar to how Chaos Knights work, as in, like, anything that is below starting strength must take a Battle Shock in your opponent's command phase. And, of course, you turn this on in your command phase and then go do a bunch of damage a bunch of things, then stand Bellicor next to them. And every time they fail a Battle Shock, Bellicor will get D3 models back. So D3 wounds back. Yep. Actually really cool. Like, Bellicor's down to, like, 4 wounds. You're just hanging on there, going pop, 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 a couple of things, stand Bellicor next to them. Get a bunch of wounds back. It can be pretty sick.
That could be so punishing because those
very punishing
models are not necessarily easy to wound. Is he still does he still make it to where it's difficult to shoot at him? And I assume he still is just as tough when the vulnerable save.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's got a T11, 3 up, 20 wounds, OC5. His shooting attack, I believe, stayed the same, but in combat now, he's got 7 attacks with dev wounds at strength 14, neg 4, D6 plus 1. And he has one of the better sweeps in the game as well. So he's got sustained 1 with 14 attacks, strength 8, AP3 on a sweep, which is Primarch level AP, and 1 damage, but 14 attacks with sustained. That's and you have pacts. You already have sustained, so you're going to have lethal on those 14 attacks in this detachment. So lethal, sustained, you know, hitting on 2s, wounding Astartes on 2s with AP3. If they don't AOC, they're going straight to a 6-up. So he'll shred through, like, you know, 20 Crusaders, no problems.
And can be healing at the same time? Oof.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So Bellicor's back.
He's much improved, man. Much improved. I do really want to point out the Flesh Hound changes. So the Flesh Hounds now have Uppy Downy, similar to Space Marine Scouts. And I think this makes them like one of the preeminent utility units available to Demons. In fact, if you could take them into Space Marines.
Sometimes how we refer to things that can jump off the table after they've been deployed, they can go off the table and come back down in the subsequent turn.
Exactly right. And the reason that they're really good in the Shadow Legion, which is the new detachment, is because you have access to like 3 or 4 other instances of a similar ability where at different timings throughout the game, you'll be placing things back into reserve and then at times rapid ingressing them if you want, or bringing it back down doing some other action. So you can have this army that has this identity that it plays a lot of the field and then just kind of fades away. Very, very, actually very similar to Grey Knights, funnily enough. Who would have thunk? Hypocrite.
Man.
Don't worry, there's still not as big a hypocrite as Space Wolves. It's fine.
What?
Wow.
There's no psychers in the Space Wolves.
Wolf priest. Yeah, he's just praying to the warp instead of, you know, summoning the warp. It's totally
weird.
Different.
Thank you very much.
It's so weird. Bless them. Bless them all. It's so fun. It's so fun.
We've also seen some like bloodthirster action happening recently too.
So the bloodthirster.
Rinmasters are back. People were playing with Rinmasters a year and a half, 2 years ago or so, and then I think they kind of floated out of fashion. But I think Rinmasters and some Khorne stuff is back.
Yeah. So this detachment. So instead of getting your legions aligned buffs, it depending on which style of demon you are, which god of demons you are, you will just get a blanket, essentially like army rule for whatever god you are, and Khorne just gets advance and charge. Like, it's debatable that like a pure Khorne Shadow Legion army plus Bellicor is a better Khorne army than the Khorne demons detachment just for Khorne. It's debatable. It's very exciting. If you're Zinch, you're permanently minus one to hit, shooting and fighting, doesn't matter. If you are Nurgle, now this is quite interesting, you are permanently minus one to wound, his strength is higher. Now, where this is key is that you now have the plus one toughness aura from the GUOs, from the Great Unclean Ones. So you're hitting a whole new breakpoint upon which that minus one to wound can take effect. Like, you think about minus one to wound on a toughness 5 model, or you could have minus one to wound if strength is higher on a toughness 6 model, that being Plague Bearers being the case in point here, or just minus one to wound on Nurglings, who are usually very easy to kill. You chuck that minus one to wound on, and the fact that if you are having to fight them, you're already minus one to hit, they actually become a big problem. But the case you were talking about, Paul, with the Bloodthirster is due to a certain enhancement. I'm just scrolling down to it right now. I believe it is called... Went too far. Always the way.
I split down back in again. I apologize.
No worries. this is called Fate to Darkness. At the end of the fight phase... The fight phase, not yours, not your opponent's, the. If the bearer's unit destroyed one or more enemy units this phase and is not within engagement range of one or more enemy units, you can remove the bearer's unit from the battlefield and place it back in strat reserve. Now, where this is big is getting a kill on your turn, fading back into reserve, and then rapid ingressing back down onto the table in your opponent's turn. So you have another Bloodthirster that now has advance and charge. Doesn't go through walls like it does in the Khorne detachment, which is why there's some things here being like, is this better, is this not? But you can jump this guy out, go and kill just about anything. You have a 1 CP strat in this detachment also for Lance and plus 1 AP on Khorne models. It's Lance for everybody, but if you're Khorne, you get plus 1 AP in addition. And so this guy will go in and he pretty much kill everything in the game, anything in the game, and then he's just going to buck out. He's just going to go straight back into strat reserve. And then in your movement phase, you better remember that there's a freaking Bloodthirster in reserve, because it's going to rapid ingress and do it to you again.
That's not a model you forget.
No, generally not. Generally not. It's a big base as well, so you can zone it out. Now, there is some interplay here, because it has to not be within engagement range of other enemy units when it bounces out. So the way to play around this is setting up multiple options for heroic interventions, because if you just put in enough models, he's not going to be able to kill himself out of combat and he's going to be stuck on the table. Or you make him have to split attacks and make things awkward, especially if there's units you have that have AOC equivalents or minus to hit monster wound, invulnerable saves. And then, when he can't bounce out, you just fall back and you do your best to try and take him off the table. But it is a very, very big threat that you need to respect.
And this is also being beefed up by the Rinmaster, so they're like in a lot of lists. And so this is going to be, which gives them the plus to all the relevant Khorne things.
Yep. Yep.
So this thing can do a lot of damage. And I think you're right. Like, the Bloodthirster, although you mentioned not being able to go through walls, still has a decent movement stat and gets a lot of, like, with a savvy general, can direct it into things where it gets that ability several times.
Only other thing I'll point out is that Bloodletter has got plus two move on their data sheet. So they're movement 8 now. And then, of course, if they're in Bellicor's detachment, they're advance and charge. So movement 8, advance and charge, and of course they go through walls, their infantry. That's pretty juicy. I mean, if you rapid ingress Bloodletters, they've got an 8-inch move now. So if you rapid ingress 9 inches away, they're just charging. There's no need to roll the dice. They're just doing it. You just want to see how far you have to go if you want to try and steal objectives and pile in and basing and stuff. But that's really nice. Very nice.
I know you mentioned briefly Nurgle, but there have been a lot of talk out there about how there's a whole much life breathed back into the Nurgle side of things. Because of what you're talking about, even more difficult to win.
Yeah, I may have said it in passing, but instead of having the 6 up feel no pain aura from the Great Unclean One, you now just have plus 1 toughness, which is not debatable. That is a lot better. Like, would I rather save the wounds I've already taken, or would I rather not be wounded as much? And you're like, oh yeah, not be wounded as much, baby. Let's go.
Your opportunities to botch that invulnerable save.
Yep.
Sorry, demonic save. Sorry, Reb, what were you saying?
No, I was just bringing it up. I mean, because there's a lot to this. Poxbringer right? So we talked about what Bellicor can, and then you start blending in some of the other Nurgle aspects. Now, the Nurgle detachment, I still think is incredibly strong.
Mm.
But then you look at something like the Sloppity Biopiper, right? At the start of the fight phase, every enemy unit within 6 inches of this model must take a battle shock test, and you start adding these things up. And then you look at certain, you know, it's not just taking mortal wounds. I mean, some of it's like remove a model. Some of it is an infantry model, and that can be painful in certain aspects, depending when you're not even dealing just mortal wounds. You're straight up picking a 3-wound infantry model up and things like that.
Centurion.
Exactly. Different aspects.
So one of my favorite things about the Nurgle detachment is as some fundamental like philosophies in tabletop battle games, and I'm sure Red's probably going to agree or disagree with me very thoroughly, but there's the proactive things that you can do to ensure your victory, and there's the failure points you can enforce upon your opponent. The things that they, like, you know, a lot of failure points at times will talk have been like stat check. You can stat check your opponent.
Yep.
You can overwhelm them, you can pressure them, you can jail them. You're putting in failure points into their game by what you do.
Yeah, but they're not things to make decisions they don't want to make. You know,
but they're not necessarily things that your unit's doing. Like, you're not going and killing them to order to put those failure points in. This is what I love about the Demon's attachment. It's a different philosophy of the Nurgle Demon's attachment. It's a different philosophy. You're putting failure points into your opponent's game rather than stacking up like your damage to 11 out of 10 in order to just overwhelm them. You're just adding all these failure points. Will they fail this battle shock to not get primary? Will they fail this battle shock to remove a model, and then they won't get? They'll have a failure point that they don't have enough damage anymore to kill this Great Unclean One, and then Great Unclean One gets to attack, kill some more Fellow Battle Shock, things, things. You're adding all these different failure points into the game mechanics and systems. I think it's just real. That's why I love detachment. It's just like a different philosophy of playing the game, and it's really interesting.
Well, and I'll build on top of that. I'll actually agree with you.
Yes,
people can celebrate the background all they want.
Wow. I wish I had a little gold sticker right now. I'd put it right on this cheek for you. Right.
Supposedly, Paul's recording this, so you can always go back and watch it again later.
Oh, it's gonna be clipped. It's gonna be clipped. It's gonna be my ringtone on my phone. It's just going to be like, I do actually agree with you, Adam. Oh,
somehow we should go back and it's going to be like, the recording's going to be like, I don't agree with you at all.
Paul will scrub it. Can't be known.
To that end, though, you know, it's in my real job, I've been thinking a lot about certain aspects of this concept of suppression, right? And so suppression, a lot of people will take as like, you know, 30K has like pinning tests. But to suppress an enemy, it doesn't just have to be a physical aspect of it. There's a psychological aspect to it. And, you know, when I've talked about maneuver before in the past of where, again, it's not just movement, right? You don't move in your movement phase. You maneuver. You try to put yourself in a position of advantage, of greater advantage than you, that you can then take advantage of versus what your enemy's doing, right? You're trying to capitalize on these opportunities, and exactly along the lines of what you're talking about, Adam, in regards of you by moving or doing certain things, it all needs to be in a regard of advantage for you over what your opponent's doing. And then the Nurgle detachment has this aspect of suppression of just by being present in places, and opponents have to be aware of where that shadow of chaos is, the warp aspect, and like what they're walking into. And so you'll actually suppress the opponent's desire to move somewhere. You know, you're not even hitting them, but you're actually suppressing their opportunities to maneuver because you have that advantage. And so suppression can be done, whether it's direct fire, indirect fire, just, you know, obscuration, right? You've obscured the movement lane that they can no longer move through, because if they go through this and they run into the wrong aura somewhere or another, they end up having to, you know, I mean, not everybody can be Space Marines with leadership 6 up, you know, to take these things. And then so many other things stack on to make it -1 or whatever, that it's this thing where we've always talked about leadership mechanics and how well these things have worked. And I think we're seeing one of these aspects that's really tapped into this and is making people have to think twice about it. Well, which I think is great.
I remember at the start of 10th edition, like they GW touted that, you know, battle like morale would matter again, and that hasn't really started coming of age until now, I believe. Like, sure. Battleshock is actually coming of age as a legitimate phase of the game again, whereas at the start of the edition, it kind of didn't matter, because you know why? No one took battle shocks because anytime you got shot, you were dead. So it didn't freaking matter.
As I was saying, to play slightly devil's advocate, is that still, I think, in matched play games, most of the time we will consider a being susceptible to battle shock a liability, and we will try to put things in our army that are less susceptible to it, you know, or you're just dead, to your exact point. Like,
it's a great point, and like just consideration for it. Something else I wanted to point out from the demons, because since we're kind of making the rounds, I agree that Slaanesh is on an unfortunate end of it, but we haven't talked about Tzeentch yet.
Tzeentch,
whatever.
Never heard There's of this. This god you think of?
Well, it's supposed to be difficult to pronounce because he's a puzzle master. So, with pink horrors and blue horrors, and when specifically you look at Bellicor's detachment, where Penumbral Puppetry, Shadow Legion, Tzeentch units only. Each time an attack targets this unit, subtract one from the hit roll.
Yeah. Yep.
So take a squad of mixed of pink horrors and blue horrors that are going to split. They've got a 4+ invuln for the pink horrors, and then they're -1 to hit, and then they split. And it's just going to be a tough thing to crack. Tough battle line unit.
Yeah, in addition, you may not always want to use this stratagem on that unit, but there is a 1 CP strat to regain 3 wounds on a model. And then if you're a Tzeentch model, you get a model back as well. So it might not always be worth it for 1 CP, get back 1 pink horror, but sometimes that is going to be annoying as hell.
Yeah, depending on what that OC of the opponent is.
Exactly right.
Well, and then you throw in this Mantle of Gloom aura that can stack. It's Shadow Legion model only. Yeah. One enemy unit is within engagement range of the bear's unit. Subtract one from the objective control characteristic of models in that enemy unit, and that's just going to make this unit super frustrating.
Yeah, you put that on a herald in that unit, and no one can flip that objective off you. Like, no one can just... Because the best they can throw is 20 OC, unless they've got some, like, a unit of 20 Primaris Crusaders, which has 40. But even they'll go down to 30. But, you know, if they have a unit of 20 OC, like a unit of Catachans or something... They can't flip that objective. You are 20 plus the Herald, and they're -1. There's almost nothing in the game that flips that on you. And that's big. That's really big.
Demons are, I would consider that back. I mean, right now, think of everyone. A lot of people have demon armies.
Okay. Bone to pick. Or a tough question to throw at the panel.
Yeah.
It has been told to us now that demons will not be getting a codex. They will be updated via this index. And, you know, they'll update it or not update it. How do we feel about one of the most iconic factions in all of every game, I think, except Blood Bowl, maybe even Blood Bowl, that G-Dub's ever done, kind of all of a sudden being semi-unsupported in 40K?
I don't know that there are demons in Blood Bowl.
Me either. That's why I said maybe Blood Bowl, because I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's but even if that is true, like forever, you know, even if that is true, I think demons are very much a part of 40K still.
Exactly right. It doesn't look like they want them to not be a part of 40K, but I don't know if anybody knows enough about AOS. Have they gotten, when was the last time they got a book in AOS? Because I feel like what we're doing here is we're following what AOS is doing, and the demons are rolled into their mortal counterparts, where you have the Hedonites with the Slaanesh, you have the Tzeentchians with the Tzeentchians, and et cetera, et cetera. And we've already seen that with the Emperor's Children, them having Slaaneshi demons in there. Do we think that's going to be the direction they go? And how do we feel about it if they do?
I mean, if the index remains a thing with 6 detachments, and not saying they couldn't add more detachments.
Is it just a codex? Yeah. At that point, right? Yeah. I mean, but is that what they're doing in AOS? Is that what they've done?
Yeah, that's what they've done in AOS. So basically, you don't really intermingle the Chaos Gods, but they get to have their mortal champions and minions and stuff kind of intermixed in there. And I don't really have a horse in the race, whether that's good or bad. I don't have a Chaos army at all. I mean, it kind of looks cool to have their little mortal people mixed in. So on the table, it might look cool to have Space Marines and demons kind of hanging out together, working on the same team.
Yeah. I'm not against it. I think it could be a very valid way to push this forward. It was more, I don't know how I feel about one of the factions that's been part of my, you know, part of my knowledge of the game, kind of possibly getting left by the wayside.
I don't know if that's like the book is closed on that stuff. Like I think seeing how it plays out, seeing how it does intermingle, like it's very encouraging, I think, to see it be open to the Chaos factions and less bound by something like an Allies matrix or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, that's true, like though. Where it's just it's and I guess that maybe even like part of the concept of like an underlying theme of these last edition or so is that the lore is making itself more present in the codexes and things are happening in your mind and you're less kind of bound by these weird structures that seem to force out some of that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's definitely been the case over the last three editions, like since 7th edition, where nothing mattered and it was just it was essentially the Drew Carey show. Let's make up the rules and they're making up the points as we go. Every edition since, the armies are starting to more thoroughly reflect the fluff, pretty much, and it's incremental. Like, I mean, 8th edition was getting better, and we're even better again in 10th edition, because 8th edition was like soup. Was the identity of 8th edition, where it's just like, take them all together, whatever. We weren't quite done with the 7th edition, nothing really matters yet kind of stuff. But 10th edition is very good for having armies that look like armies. And that's been one of my biggest gripes with past editions. Like, I want my army to look like the White Dwarf page that I opened, you know, when I was a 10-year-old that had, like, a Predator, a Boxnort, two Rhinos, one unit of Devastators, a single Captain as the character. Like, yes. Yes, give me it. I want that to be good in the way to play. And look, game's never been closer to that since then than it is now. Question. So I should have asked this before. Does anybody know if those in those AOS books, whether you can still run pure demons in them? Like, or they always have to have a little bit of their mortal thrall. And if no one knows, that's fine.
Yeah, so I believe that you can with how you do it, because each sort of like, I guess like regiment equivalent or whatever has to have a leader for it, and there are plenty of demon leaders that you can run. Whether or not it's competitive, I couldn't tell you, but I do believe that it is doable.
That's all I want. All I want is that there's still a way to play demons, like a mono demon army, if you want to moving forward. Because that's the only thing I have a fear for surviving if these changes are what ends up manifesting.
Let's go and take a quick break, then we'll come back and jam some more 40K. See you on a minute.
Do you like how I got manifesting in there? I thought it was good. So good.
I didn't catch that on the first playthrough, but that's awesome. See you on a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everybody. Please check out our sponsors. I tell you, Discount Games has been with us for a long time and such a stand-up and great person to be working with. And so if you are looking to get on this pre-order train for some of the amazing stuff that's going to be coming out, hit them up, see if they've got what you're looking for. Check out the other stuff as well. It's a full game store. It has a whole bunch of array of stuff.
I'm of the opinion everyone needs to make real good friends with their LGS or GW at the moment, because so many stores only get their allocation of boxes of whatever the new hotness is, the EC box, for me, it was the Templar box. I really wanted two of the Templar boxes. And I had to just bring a coffee in and be like, so how many are you getting? Can I? Because I don't want to be selfish. I wanted two, but I'm like, I don't want to take that off like Timmy around the block, the 12-year-old who loves his Black Templars. And I'm like, if you're getting 20 or 30, yeah, put me down for two. Otherwise, you know, I won't be selfish. I'll take the one.
Yeah, I don't want to disadvantage Timmy, Adam.
No, I just don't want to be the kid who takes away. You know what I mean.
I don't necessarily know everything about the pre-order process, because sometimes I'm the one also there just right when it goes live at 1 o'clock trying to click and get what I want. Also, but with some of the retailers and our sponsor, you can email them ahead of time. They can log your pre-order, do their thing, so you might get their part of what they've got, and then you're left to the wolves to get your squad of six, your other three boxes.
As somebody who relies heavily on my local game store, as soon as I see something in like a preview, I am like immediately both in the Discord so everybody else knows that I'm first, and also I'm telling my game store, please, I need this, and I use the word need.
Yeah,
it's not too strong.
It's very fair. So please hit up Jay. You will be great. Always been a great partner of the show and a friend of the show. And so hit him up, please. But next weekend, like I mentioned, Adepticon is happening in a completely new city. They grew so big, they outgrew the massive convention center there in Schaumburg, in Illinois. Now they're in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
It's awesome.
Which is still on the lake, as I understand it. I've never been to Milwaukee.
Yeah, it'll be my first time too.
I'm just looking at my flight times. All I know is that's like 50 minutes north by plane, just like straight up. Yeah. I mean, all I didn't really know about it is Wayne's World, essentially.
Yeah. Milwaukee.
Indeed.
It's going to be cold. It's going to be still winter up there. It's starting to get spring down here, but it's going to be winter up there. And cold. What I normally do, though, and look, Adepticon is a huge... Yeah. Sorry, Tim.
It's the only snow I see every year. It's literally going to Adepticon. It's literally the only snow I see every year. So, yeah. It's very cold to me.
It's way north for me, all right? So,
yeah.
We're actually way north for Adam, too.
Yeah, we're freaking lizards by comparison.
But it's, I try to find places to go and like where I want to grub down. Like I want to see, I'm really going to be missing Kuma's Corner. You've heard us talk about it on the show before. Those they started to make specialty dice that you could get if you ordered the convention special burger. And that, you know, I don't even know where we're going to go now. I started to kind of scout out some places that I'd like to hit up. There are a couple of, pubs and restaurants near there that do seem interesting. So it's like in the center of the city. So it's in a real happening spot is what it looks like. So if we ever do get out after our full day of streaming Warhammer 40K games and hanging out with folks, it will be fun to try to do so to brand new places. So very much looking forward to it. If you haven't been to Adepticon before and it's not on your list to go, this is the way I characterize it, is it is the closest thing to a real like game convention that our hobby has in the United States. Like this just focused around games, like board games, strategy games, war games and the like. Thousands of people. They're not all playing 40K. Certainly there are tons of them playing 40K, but they're playing miniature games and board games and of all sorts. And after the tournaments are over and the halls start to shut down, people are playing in the lobby. They're playing in the lobby. Mm-hmm. And I hope that spirit is alive. And I know it will be, but the event hall is going to be like three times the size. So it may look like people are out there doing things. So if you're walking around the lobby and you don't see a game, keep looking. You probably got to go around another corner because it's that big. People will be doing the same thing, us included.
And please, if you're at Adepticon, come and say good day to me and Paul at a minimum. I don't know how much.
Yeah, don't worry about me.
Red's there too. Red's going to be there too.
I don't know how much Red wants to be bothered because you are actually actively playing.
I wish. I'm not going to be obviously as well placed as you and Paul, but I will be. I'm assisting and judging Kill Team.
There you go. Nice. Okay, so do bother Brad. I will tell you guys. In fact, bother him.
Yeah, and then I'm going to tell you how to go bother Adam the most.
That's also fair. You're not allowed to bother Paul, though.
No, won't bother Paul. Paul's working. No. I don't know.
Paul gets bothered so much more. It's great.
Oh, look, I'm just really looking forward to it. Like, Adepticon is one of the crown jewel destination events. There are many of them. You know, like the U.S. Open Series, the Grand Narrative, you know, some of the other independent super majors out there. But Adepticon is one of those that started it all. It is now, I forget what year they're on, 23 or something. It's a lot. There've been a lot of Adepticons, and they keep building strength.
You are correct. The first one was held in 2003, mate. So it's turning 22 this year.
Had to be close. But this is a testament to them moving locations because the interest in their event and wargaming in general is so huge, it necessitated it. And
that's awesome.
You know, that's going to be exciting.
So what event are you going to be shoutcasting?
All of them.
Yeah.
All of them?
Kill Team 2?
We're doing all the 40K events, right? Mm. We're doing the singles champs, and we're doing the fantastic teams. Well, it's teams, but it's doubles. So you got four players on a team of 1,000 points each, right, Paul?
Yeah.
And then you pair off and then play two other each.
Yep.
I really, really wanted to do the teams, but I wasn't able to, just due to other things with work and all, I wasn't able to commit. But the teams event is just such a good event. I know we've talked about it before, but it really is one of the highlights.
Well, so a lot of events now sit in certain. You have narrative events that narrative and a lot more hobby focused at times as well. And then you have like the more cutthroat, I guess, more competitive based, you know, competitive events, championship events, stuff like that.
Singularly focused on like the organized match play side of it.
Yeah. The Adepticon Teams event is one of the last holistic events, I think, that's still going with like a 20-year lineage. Where
don't
it's
take
just
this the wrong way. It's a pageant.
It's just as much about the pageantry as it is about the spirit of the game, being a great team, bringing some gifts or some drinks for your opponents, having fun, good-looking armies, and like enjoying the experience. It's like it is one of the last like real well-rounded ones, but there's still some savagery. Like I remember playing.
You got to win. You know, if you plan on taking some of the top spots, and this event prizes deep. You know, you can win for eliminating the most warlords. You can win for, you know, getting the most first bloods. That's still a thing. You know, the behind enemy lines is like a something you could plan for. You know, there are teams that just plan on trying to hit one of those objectives. And then, of course, you got your battle points. And then, of course, you've got your, you know, overall best than the other.
Hobby scores, stuff like that, yeah. Like best display as well is another category as well, because displays are absolutely buck wild. Like it's kind of nuts. And yeah, it's an incredible one. I played in one of them with some mates, and we all played different Space Marine chapters that were part of the Indominus Crusade. And that was really cool. We had a big display board where, you know, Gilliman was arriving with the Indominus Crusade to save all the firstborns from the Tyranids.
That's cool.
It was really cool. And then we played against guys who were just like, wow, this is our cool board is just like a board. It might as well be blank wood. And it was fantastic. It was like, it was really well done. It was really well painted. And then there's people with like four armies on four different tiers of like a fighting labyrinth through a hive structure. And you're just like, okay.
There have been floating spaceships. There's been full Titan construction facilities. There have been orcs flying through on an asteroid. You know, there's like... people go all out. This is one of those chase events that people want to win and been trying to figure out ways to crack it for decades, I guess, at this point.
Because you want to have strong armies, but not have like unfun armies to play. Mm-hmm. You want to have incredibly painted stuff while also having like a strong army. So you want to be like, you want to be triple threats. You want to be enjoyable people to play with strong armies that are absolutely gorgeous. And it's just very hard to pull those three things together because they all require a lot of time in different directions.
Yeah. Legendary event, and looking forward to be, it's always a spectacle, like to what people bring and like the displays we're describing about how they try to achieve this. And then also the Spirit Award. The Spirit Award is separate from the what your overall track of points is. And that could be costumes. Like, it's very routine for some high percentage of the field to be in a themed costume for their team or their narrative for their army list and stuff like that. The spirit and community is incredibly high, and really looking forward to seeing that play out and doing some commentary on it over the weekend. This is like, I miss playing in this event. It is is that good. It's, like, I love talking about Warhammer. Do not get me wrong. I love talking about Warhammer. And obviously, that's, you know, what I want to be doing. But this is one of those events that just pulls on you. You know, it's like, oh, you want to get in there and be a part of it with the 400 other people that are doing it and be a part of that pageant.
Well, I literally went to Adepticon to do this event because it was just one of those events I wanted to have the hole punched on my bingo card, on my 40K bingo card. It's just one of the ones that always had in my mind. Like, I always wanted to go to Adepticon, play in the 40K teams with some mates, and just have a brilliant time, and we did.
I remember the first time I ever heard about this event, like, four-person teams? Like, no way.
Yeah, does that make sense? Four is not the right number.
Yeah.
And then you find out it's actually 2v2, but you rotate who's the 2v2s.
It used to be a 4-round event. Now I believe it's a 5-round event. And so you would, and it's designed to where you have to play with your other teammate.
Yeah.
At least once. And then the last game was Captain's Choice. Now the last two games are Captain's Choice. So the trick with the event is you typically, with this, the way army lists are created and the way, you know, it all comes together is that you typically have like one odd pairing, your one bad pairing on your own team. And it's the, how do you mitigate that and still get through all of them.
Do you get it out of the pool like in your first round, hoping that you have all your better lineups saved for the possibly harder rounds to come? Or do you just make sure you get through the first round, use one of your strongest, and then have it, you know, have this awkward pairing later, not knowing if you, you know, can go the distance if the team you're playing against got rid of their awkward pairing early. So they've got one of their best pairings into your awkward. And then, yeah, it's really quite deep when you get to that level.
We always encourage the tournament organizers to, you know, it's their risk. Do whatever you want. The freedom is yours to decide to to design the event that you think your people want to play in. And the Adepticon judges and organizers play in that space a lot, which is cool. Really cool. Really looking for. And the singles is also a very stout competitive event, and it's a bit of a grind because it starts on Thursday.
It's only getting more competitive as well.
Yeah.
It's only ramping up.
So we're talking about a lot of the cool like painting and sports and theme and all that kind of stuff, but this is also still a very competitive event in the backdrop of a really cool like vibe from this convention and games.
So you said it's holistic though, but is there a lore component?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
yeah. The story that you build everything that you have into your team is part of it for sure.
The judges will basically throw your score right in the garbage if you've done that.
If the four armies that you've taken don't make sense, if they're not cohesive or they don't have a lore reason to all be there. Like I've seen people who have, you know, Eldari and Thousand Sons, and they're taken in the same team because they're warring in the Webway. And so they build their theme around that and the display board around that. And that can go the distance as well. But a lot of people like to take like all Imperium or, you know, all Xenos or all, you know, Chaos and stuff like that, because that's just the easiest things to line up. And then you'll see people with like rolls of parchment on a plinth in front of their display board telling you exactly all the stories of all the characters. They'll have a freaking soundtrack and a smoke machine going at the same time. Like, it's baller.
All those 5 points matter. I should say five. I don't know what the point is. The judges, you know, they keep it a little bit of black boxy type stuff.
They let some things out of the rubric, like black box, and be like, you know, if you want to win, you'd have to have a display. Your stuff has to make sense and stuff like that. But then, like, how much those things matter, they won't quite tell. Like how it's weighted, which I think is the correct way to get everybody invested.
When you're deciding best of for, a 100 plus teams, I think it's some discretion around best, you know, of course, make its way in.
Towards the top end, it can get quite subjective. Like if you have two teams that had just like knocked it out of the freaking park, how are you going to split the hairs, right? How are you going to split?
Maybe you go by vibes.
Yeah, just vibing. It's a very tough event to win for lots of reasons, but everyone, what they have created, I'll tell you, is a nice spirit of people wanting to come and knowing what they're up against. And it's both incredibly fun time because you are playing in a team environment with your buddies, you know, like you're winning, you're sharing the game, the wins and the losses. But it's also what has to go into, if you're planning to try to do really well at this, you have to think in ways that is radically different than a singles in a success as a little bit of change of pace.
Yeah.
Look, check us out. Like, come check. We'll try to bring you as much of Adepticon as we possibly can on the Games Workshop Twitch stream. We might even be on YouTube this time. We'll see. But definitely the Twitch stream. You're going to be seeing lots of armies on showcase. Lots of great competitive games being showcased. We'll be talking about whatever happens there at Adepticon, and also going to be talking a little about the new environment and stuff. I can't wait. And of course, I don't think we'll get a show out next weekend because we'll be in Milwaukee. Almost at Chicago, just out of habit. But we'll be in Milwaukee. But we'll definitely be bringing you After Effect the next show. And that's our show this week. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad we got to get back together, get this, start talking about everything that has come out, what we're looking forward to in the future, where we're going to be this coming up weekend or next weekend. It's been a pleasure hanging out with y'all.
Always is.
Do not forget to like, share, and subscribe. Please give us those thumbs up. And if you made it this far, the button's right there. Go ahead and hit it. It means a lot to us. Tell those algorithms that other people should be coming and hanging out with us as well. We'll see y'all soon, everybody. Have a great night.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
be said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.